listeners, welcome to The Right Kind of Book Talk. I'm your host, Stacey Wright. Welcome back. How has your week been? I had an awesome week, okay? I cleared so many arcs from my TBR in the last week, so I am one happy little reader. Now, I've decided to do something a little bit different this week. I'm going to give you my top books from my reading week. So I'm going to start with the audiobooks that I really enjoyed. So I started out the week with Splinter Effect by Andrew Ludington. Now, this is about an archaeologist, and his name's Rabbit Ward. But he's not just any kind of archaeologist. He is a time-traveling archaeologist. It was action-packed. It was fast-paced. It was such a good debut novel and the start of a series. So kind of think Indiana Jones if he could time travel. The Love Haters by Catherine Center. Now, I had the audiobook and I had a paperback copy of this book. But for me, the audiobook really brought to life the characters. It was funny. It was really relatable. And I loved every dang second of that. I listened to One of Us is Lying a few months ago. So I went and grabbed a copy of One of Us is Next by Karen M. McManus. It wasn't as good as the first one, but it still was a really enjoyable audiobook. Like, I'm going to listen to the next installment, One of Us is Back, because the series as a whole, it's decent. It's a really decent audiobook series. Okay, now for the books that I physically read. Now, I received a copy of an indie book called Shades of Power by Jenny Grimes. Now, it was surprisingly good. I really enjoyed the characters and the world building. Now, you can check out all my reviews for all the books that I have read at Bookalorian Designs on Instagram or thelionessofliteracy.com, which is my blog. If you are willing to take a chance on a self-published author, I really recommend giving this one a go, especially as she has book two coming out in June, so you don't even have to wait that long. Then I read The Bane Witch by Ava Morgan. Okay, so this book is about Piers. She has no idea she's a witch, okay? And when she flees her abusive husband and accidentally kills a man who's trying to, you know, her, he kisses her and he dies. She knows that she has to find out what's going on, and all she has to go on is this cryptic clue left by her aunt years ago. So now she has to find her aunt to find out the truth, and the truth is insane. Now, don't let the cover of this one fool you, because it kind of looks a little fluffy because the book is so dark. It's dark as fuck, and I devoured it. And the last one I read is Death at a Highland Wedding by Kelly Armstrong. Now, I'm already addicted to this series. It's a rip through time. Mallory was a cop in the present day and ends up in the past. It is so good. This one was book four of the series. And honestly, this series better not end anytime soon, like ever, because it's a solid historical mystery series and I love it. Alrighty then, so this is episode 20, Women Writers Who Paved the Way for Women in Literature, Part 2. I've had a lot of fun researching for this episode. I have learned so much, I found some books to read, and I basically kept myself out of trouble. Now, at the end of this episode, I'm going to give you the ultimate girl power reading guide so you can maybe read some of these books yourself. Now, I will be including the books from part one, so stay tuned for that. But before we dive in, let's see what books you can get today. Yep, it's publication day. So let's start with A Proposal to Die For by Molly Harper, and that's a mystery romance. Big Chief by John Hickey, and that one is a literary fiction. Blood in the Water by Casey Sherman, and that is a true crime. Boys with Sharp Teeth by Jenny Howell, and that's a young adult paranormal fantasy book. Cupcakes and Corpses by Paige Tyler, and that's a cozy mystery. Overruled by Lara Ferguson, and it's a dark romantasy. Ooh, add that one to the 2BR, DC. Rabbit Moon by Jennifer Hay, and that's a psychological thriller. She's a Lamb by Meredith Hambrick, and that's a satire novel. I've had one heck of a research week, and creating my shortlist of female authors was really quite difficult. I labored over who to keep and who to cut. So which author am I starting the episode out on? Margaret Atwood. Margaret Atwood is one of the very first authors that sent me into my obsession with reading. Now, I was 15 years old, obviously living at home with my parents, and my uncle used to bring me comic books and graphic novels. Then one day, he bought me a book. It was Alias Grace by Atwood. It sounded really interesting. So what is it about? So let me set the scene for you, okay? It's 1843, and Grace Marks has been convicted for her involvement in the vicious murders of her employer and his housekeeper and mistress. Some believe Grace is innocent. Others think her evil or insane. Now, she's serving a life sentence. Grace claims she has no memory of the murders. So in comes an up-and-coming expert in the field of mental illness, and he's been hired by a group of reformers and spiritualists who are seeking a pardon for Grace. Now, he listens to her story while bringing her closer and closer to the day she cannot remember. Now, what will he find in attempting to unlock her memories? Now, you may not actually know this, but this is actually based on a real event. Grace Marks was a real person, and she was really arrested and sentenced to jail for murdering her employer. Now, most people, when they think of Margaret Atwood, they automatically think of The Handmaid's Tale. Still a phenomenal book, don't get me wrong, but Grace will always have my heart. So, what are some of the things that you may not know about this author? Well, firstly, did you know she was Canadian? I'm always looking for Canadian authors. And the fact that she lives in the country I made my home is a huge plus for me. So, yay. Okay, so this next part, I was a little grossed out when I found out. She eats bugs. And she likes eating them. She said that her dad was an entomologist. So she has nothing against eating insects. It's just, She is one of the best-selling authors. She's published more than 60 books, and she won the Booker Prize twice. First in 2000 for The Blind Assassin, then again in 2019 for The Testaments, which is her sequel to The Handmaid's Tale. Now, at the age of 85, she's still writing. Her latest published work is called Book of Lives, a memoir of sorts, and that is due out at the end of this year. Now, she freely admits that she does not write every day and that she is a terrible speller. Now, I love that. She has a brilliant personality, and I've really enjoyed watching her interviews, which is what I spent the week doing. Now, did you know A Handmaid's Tale was written in 1984? Coincidence? When Atwood was living in Berlin. It was inspired by the presidency of Ronald Reagan in 1980. Now, there was a big pushback against what had happened in the 70s, especially when it came to women's rights. She clearly felt that women's rights were being undersold by the Reagan era, and it prompted a very patriarchal novel, putting women really low down on the flagpole. We can all relate to that, right? But did you know that one of her ancestors, Mary Webster, was actually accused of witchcraft and hanged? Well, almost hanged. They didn't actually succeed in hanging her. She is known in history as Half-Hanged Mary. Like, they tried to hang her. But at that point in time, they hadn't invented the drop. So they just kind of strung her up. She must have either have had a very tough neck or been very light because they did not succeed. Okay? They didn't manage it. And that is mental. Freaking mental. Now, which genre did she feel inspired by? And believe it or not, dystopian literature. Atwood has said that she modeled Handmaid's Tale on the dystopian literature that gripped her as a youth, which included George Orwell's 1984 and Huxley's Brave New World. Now, in a Lit Hub essay, she wrote, "Once you've been intrigued by literary form, you always have a secret yen to write an example of it for yourself." Yeah, I can believe that. Margaret Atwood is acknowledged being influenced by Virginia Woolf, particularly her feminist writing and stream of unconsciousness style. I like that too, which she found resonated with her own writing process. So let's slide into our next author, Virginia Woolf. Now, I am going to be very honest here. I have only ever read Mrs. Dalloway. It was published in 1925, and it examines one day in the life of Clarissa Dalloway. She's an upper-class Londoner who is married to a member of Parliament. And Mrs. Dalloway is essentially plotless because the only action that takes place happens mainly in the character's consciousness. Now, it's one of those books where I probably wasn't ready for it when I originally read it. And it's a book I'm definitely going to try again now because I think I'm going to appreciate the delicate intricacies of her work more. Now, Virginia Woolf's work is much loved and studied, but her intimate relationship with fellow female author Vita Sackville-West is rarely more than an overlooked footnote. Yet that's really bizarre because this relationship was absolutely formative for both of these women. After their first meeting at a rather disastrous dinner party in 1922, Virginia and Vita exchanged fascinating, flirty, lyrical letters all the way through to the Second World War and Virginia's suicide nearly 20 years later. And what could be more revealing than a letter? Now, you may be assuming that these ladies were bisexual, and you would be wrong assuming that Virginia was. Now, Vita was. She had affairs with men and women and enjoyed a pretty open marriage, but Virginia didn't feel that way. She wasn't attracted to women. She was attracted to just one woman, Vita. Now, she was happily married to her husband, but what she shared with Vita, now, that was something incredibly special. But did you know that she had a half-sister? Laura was in an asylum for 4 years, most likely from having intellectual delays. They also think that she may well have been abused, which is really sad. Virginia was no stranger to being institutionalized herself and was in and out of them for a nervous disorder. Her attempt at suicide in 1910 landed her back in one, and believe it or not, was not her first time being held. She threw herself out of a window. Now, I can't imagine how someone must be feeling to willingly do that. I really can't. Virginia Woolf also struggled with mental health, particularly with what is now thought to have been bipolar disorder. She would have periods of severe depression and extreme mania, which basically is what we would call bipolar today. Her life was marked by early traumas, including the deaths of her mother and her brother, and the allegations of sexual abuse from her brothers. In 1941, at the age of 59, she committed suicide by walking into the river with stones in her pockets. This just, for me, is so sad. But did you know, originally it was her husband's idea. He floated the idea of doing just that as a joint suicide pact the year before. Weird, right? But how did she start out in writing? Now, every writer has to start somewhere, and Virginia Woolf made her first break into the publishing world with an essay, and it was titled Haworth, November 1904, which appeared in The Guardian on December 21st, 1904. Virginia, who worshipped the literary Bronte sisters as idols, wrote the piece about a pilgrimage to their family home, that almost holy shrine where the classics Jane Eyre, Wuthering Heights, and The Tenant of Wildfell Hall were produced. In 1933, Virginia Woolf published Flush, a light-hearted and experimental book that tells a story from the perspective of poet Elizabeth Barrett Browning's dog, who loyally stays by her side through illness and romance and adventures alike. Okay, I think I just found my next book. But did you know her name wasn't actually Virginia? It was Adeline. Virginia was actually her middle name. Now, if I did that, I would be Melissa instead of Stacy. Nah, I don't look like a male. I couldn't get away with that. Now, did you know that in the 19th century, nice women were quiet? Virginia Woolf said that she and her sister were taught the tea table manner. She was designed to keep polite, self-effacing conversation flowing. The most vital fact in her life was the contrast between the stifling of utterance, her inside voice, and the ground shaking under her like an earthquake when she brought out her full-throated outsider voice, protesting against military or domestic violence. in favor of nurture, listening, and sympathy, values which the civilized of both genders already shared. The voice of her outsider prepares the way for the present voice of the Me Too generation. She was a revolutionist in her own right. Honestly, I feel a little bereft over the loss of her, to be honest, a little bereft. Let's move on to Kate Chopin. Now, what did I learn about this amazing author? Firstly, I learned how to say her name correctly, thanks to Google. Now, she was born in St. Louis, Missouri in 1850 to Eliza and Thomas. She was the third of five children, but her sisters died in infancy and her brothers from her father's first marriage in their early 20s. She was the only child to live past the age of 25. Now, how sad is that? Kate Chopin's groundbreaking novel, The Awakening, is revered for its realism and regularly included in academic reading lists. Now, it's set in the late 19th century. Its story follows Edna Pontellier, a wife and mother whose flirtation with a young bachelor leads her to desire more from life. This premise elicited widespread scorn when the book was published in 1899, and its author could never have predicted its rocky road to critical acclaim. Oh, I wonder who was doing all that scorning. Chopin's novel arrived during the feminist movement's first wave, when women fought for the right to vote and for increased autonomy. The Awakening's heroine, Edna, challenged society's expectations for women by daring to explore romance outside her marriage and gratification outside of motherhood. Now, Chopin's story of self-discovery and suicide boldly challenges the gender roles of Victorian society. Now, critics have denounced the novel as morbid, feeble, and vulgar. Chopin is another clever woman, but she has put her cleverness to a very bad use in writing The Awakening. The purport of the story can hardly be described in language fit for publication. We are fain to believe that Miss Chopin did not herself realize what she was doing when she wrote it. Of course she knew what she was doing. Haters are gonna hate. And that quote came from an anonymous reviewer in the Providence Sunday Journal. What a chicken shit. Hiding behind anon. Did you know Kate Chopin's husband, Oscar Chopin, died of swamp fever after the two had been married for around about 10 years? She was left to raise her six children by herself. I also have six children. I know how much hard work that is. She also took over the family business and she still made time to write books. So this is your sign to stop your little butt from procrastinating. You can do it too. So now what do I see here? She was an absolute badass. So who are we moving on to next? Charlotte Smith. Now, I have never read her works, but she came up a lot in my Facebook groups. Now, Charlotte Smith was an English novelist and poet of the School of Sensibility, whose sonnets contributed to the revival of the form in England. She also helped to set the conventions for Gothic fiction and wrote political novels of sensibility. Now, she was the first woman romantic writer influenced by Wordsworth and Coleridge. She had a really difficult life, a turbulent marriage to a man she wed at the age of 15. She describes him as a lazy womanizer whose family fortune was built on slave labor. They had a lot of money troubles, and she started writing to support the family after Benjamin's mismanagement of his family's wealth eventually led to their financial ruin. Now, the family were all imprisoned over the debt. How insane is that? Now, she made the unusual move to leave him with their children. She couldn't cope with the abuse anymore. She had 12 children in total, but only six of them outlived her. Writing kept food on the table, and that is massively inspiring to me. She is best known for her novels, Emmeline, The Orphan of the Castle, which was written in 1788, Desmond, written in 1792, and The Old Manor House, written in 1793. What was even more unusual about her published works is she refused to hide who she was. She published under her own name. Now that is ballsy, especially at a point in history where women authors were seen as lesser writers. So what is Emmeline, The Orphan of the Castle, about? It's basically a Cinderella story in which the heroine stands outside the traditional economic structures of English society and ends up wealthy and happy. The novel is a fantasy. At the same time, it criticizes the traditional marriage arrangements of the 18th century, which allowed women little choice and prioritized the needs of the family over the wants of the woman. Now, Smith's criticisms of marriage stem from her personal experience, and several of the secondary characters are thinly veiled depictions of her family, a technique which both intrigued and repelled contemporary readers. Little snowflakes. Props to Charlotte Smith for changing her life during a time where women had no rights. It's hard even today for a woman to walk away from bad situations, and she did it knowing everyone expected her to stay, and she was likely shunned for her choice too. But it didn't stop her. Honestly, after researching her, I was stunned into silence, and I felt such pride that she took the world by the balls and she made it her bitch. It just proves that it's a mindset, and I won't ever be doubting myself again. Next is Ayn Rand. Now, I've read her work. Phew. I really enjoyed Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead. Now, who is Ayn Rand? A phenomenally successful novelist whose books have sold millions of copies. She is the founder of a revolutionary philosophy named Objectivism. Someone who has amassed legions of fans who say her books changed their lives, and a legion of detractors who mostly haven't read her and don't want to either. So, what are the books I've read of hers even about? Atlas Shrugged is set in a dystopian United States at an unspecified time, in which the country has a national legislature instead of Congress and a head of state instead of a president. Now, the United States appears to be approaching an economic collapse with widespread shortages, business failures, and a massively decreased productivity. The pattern of industrial organization appears to be that of the late 1800s, but the mood seems to be close to that of the Depression era from the 1930s. Both the social customs and level of technology reminds one of the 1950s. It's a little bit of a mindfuck, to be perfectly honest with you. The Fountainhead, the revolutionary literary vision that sowed the seeds of objectivism, Ayn Rand's groundbreaking philosophy, and brought her immediate worldwide acclaim. This modern classic is the story of an intransigent young architect, Howard Roark, whose integrity was as unyielding as granite, and of Dominique Flanquan, the exquisitely beautiful woman who loved Roark passionately but married his worst enemy. And of the fanatic denunciation unleashed by an enraged society against a great creator. As fresh today as it was then, Rand's provocative novel presents one of the most challenging ideas in all of fiction, that man's ego is the fountainhead of human progress. Her ideas on objectivism are revolutionary. Now, I went to ayn rand.org, the website, and found some information on this. This is what I had to say. Advancing your potential. Ayn Rand wrote volumes urging people to be selfish. What? Aren't people already too selfish? Just do whatever you feel like, to be a thoughtless jerk and exploit people to get ahead. Easy, right? Except that acting thoughtlessly and victimizing others, Rand claims, is not in your self-interest. What Rand advocates is an approach to life that's unlike anything you've ever heard before. Selfishness, in her philosophy, means follow reason, not whims or faith. Work hard to achieve a life of purpose and productiveness. Earn genuine self-esteem. Pursue your own happiness as your highest moral aim. Prosper by treating others as individuals and trading value for value. At the dawn of our lives, writes Rand, we seek a noble vision of man's nature and of man's potential. Rand's philosophy is that vision. Explore it for yourself. Objectivism, a philosophy for living on earth. Now, it was fascinating stuff, I'm not gonna lie. You should probably check it out. Okay, so moving on to Toni Morrison. I'm a fan. I've read several of her books. By back to back probably about 10 years ago, and The Bluest Eyes and The Beloved Trilogy are my absolute faves. Now, what are they about? Okay, so The Bluest Eyes is a book set in the author's girlhood hometown in Ohio. It tells the story of a black 11-year-old girl named Pecola Breedlove. Pecola prays for her eyes to turn blue so she will be as beautiful and beloved as all the blonde-haired, blue-eyed children in America. In the autumn of 1941, the year of the marigolds in the Breedlove's garden did not bloom, Pecola's life does change in painful, devastating ways. Oh, God, it was so good. Okay, so Beloved. Setha, the protagonist, was born a slave and she escaped to Ohio. But even 18 years later, she's still not free. She has too many memories of Sweet Home, the beautiful farm where so many hideous things happened. And her new home is haunted by the ghost of her baby, who died nameless and whose tombstone is engraved with one single word, Beloved. Now, she was a trailblazer. Did you know she was the first black woman to win the Nobel Peace Prize for Literature? Being the first seemed to be a common theme of Morrison's life. In 1993, she became the first black woman to receive the Nobel Peace Prize in Literature. And she didn't believe she had won it. And she hung up on the friend who called to tell her that she'd won. She must have been really shocked to do that. But it's not really a surprise if you've read her work. She is an incredible writer. Now, did you know Toni isn't her given name? Toni began as a nickname. Now, Morrison's birth name was actually Chloe. At 12 years of age, she made the decision to convert to Catholicism. And during her baptism, she was christened Anthony, after the Saint Anthony of Padua. Chloe apparently wasn't a very common name at the time, and nobody could pronounce it properly outside of her family. Now, when she went to college, somebody called her Toni, and the nickname kind of stuck. She literally became Toni Morrison when she married Harold Morrison back in 1958. Now, that's something, hey? Did you know that Morrison is known for her commitment to writing for the black reader, rather than writing experiences about black characters through what she likes to call the white gaze? Honestly, I kind of prefer the way she does it. I like how she writes. I think she's one of those authors that really turned me into a much more versatile reader. Did you know that 10 of her books have made the USA Today's best-selling books list, with Paradise hitting the number one spot in 1998? The Bluest Eyes and The Song of Solomon both reached number two collectively. Her works have appeared on the list a total of 148 weeks. Did you know that before she became a novelist, Toni Morrison was actually a college professor? Right? Now, Morrison began teaching English at Texas Southern University. She then went to Howard University as a professor, and it is also where she met her husband, Harold, and he was a Jamaican architect. They later divorced, leaving her a single mother of two children. She's such a fascinating woman. And believe it or not, she didn't publish her first book until she was almost 40. So never believe it's too late to follow your dreams. That's what that's taught me today. So who's next? Anne Rice. This author is near and dear to my heart. My mom was always reading Anne Rice when I was a kid, and I used to steal her books and read them. Now, The Vampire Lestat was my introduction into her world. Dude, I was hooked. But did you know that Anne wrote across multiple genres? Gothic fiction, erotic literature, Bible fiction, historical fiction, and horror are the most notable ones. Did you know that she wrote Interview with the Vampire to cope with the grief of losing her daughter Michelle at the age of 5 to leukemia in 1972? That is absolutely freaking devastating. Did you know the character Lestat, a central figure in the Vampire Chronicles, was inspired by Rice's husband, Sam Rice, who shares a birthday with him? Did you know that Anne Rice, an admitted alcoholic, quit drinking in the mid-1979 along with her husband so that they could provide a better life for their son, Christopher? And she celebrated 28 years of sobriety back in 2008. Now, Christopher continues to run his mother's Facebook page in honor of her legacy. And believe it or not, he's also a best-selling author in his own right. Did you know? This one's my favorite, okay? She literally took a theatrical approach to book signings. At her book signings, Rice often dressed up in costumes and put on shows for her devoted fans. Now, according to an article I found from Entertainment Weekly, she dressed up as the Bride of the Moon and Stars for a 1996 signing of Memnock the Devil. She literally was wearing like this black satin gown with a black wig and gold beaded headdress. Classic! Now, you've likely seen the movie Interview with the Vampire, but did you know it was the first book in the Vampire Chronicles? She wrote a whopping 13 books in this series. Interview with the Vampire was written in 1976, and the very last book was written in 2018. Now, that's quite the span. Now, what books are in this series? Well, it starts with Interview with the Vampire. Then we have The Vampire Lestat, The Queen of the Damned, The Tale of the Body Thief, Memnock the Devil, The Vampire Armand, Merrick, Black and Gold, Blackwood Farm, Blood Canticle, Prince Lestat and the Realm of Atlantis, and Blood Communion, A Tale of Prince Lestat. The series pretty much centers around Vampire Lestat, and it all kicks off with Louis telling his story to a young reporter about how Lestat made him a vampire in the 18th century. Oh, it's a brilliant series, brilliant. And she also wrote the series Mayfair Witches, and those series overlapped with some of the same characters, and it's all beautifully tied in. I highly recommend it. If you want to ever give Anne Rice a go, I would read those. I would start with Mayfair Witches. And if you've never heard of The Color Purple, you must live under a rock. But just in case you haven't, now it's a powerful cultural touchstone of modern American literature. The Color Purple depicts the lives of African American women in the early 20th century in rural Georgia. Separated as girls, sisters Celie and Nettie sustain their loyalty and hope in each other across time, distance, and silence. Through a series of letters spanning 20 years, first from Celie to God, then the sisters to each other, despite the unknown. Now, the novel draws readers into its rich and memorable portrayals of Celie, Nettie, Shrug, Avery, and Sophia, and their experiences. Now, The Color Purple broke the silence around domestic and sexual abuse, narrating the lives of women through their pain and struggle, companionship, and growth, resilience, and bravery. Deeply compassionate and beautifully imagined, Alice Walker's epic novel carries readers on a spirit-affirming journey towards redemption and love. And honestly, it was such a moving book. Did you know that Alice is actually blind in one eye? When she was 8 years old, Walker was accidentally shot in the eye with her brother's BB gun. Now, scar tissue proceeded to grow over her eye, and Walker ended up retreating to more solitary activities, such as writing. When she was 14, the scar tissue was removed, but Walker never regained function of her eye. Now, did you know, in 1967, Alice married a Jewish civil rights lawyer. The two became the first legally married interracial couple in Mississippi. They did later divorce in 1976, but how cool is that? Did you know that religiously she defines herself as pagan or earth worshipper? That's really cool too. Did you know she is against female genital mutilation? She is also against nuclear weapons. Did you know her favorite word is irregardless? Oh, God. And that she has that word on her license plate. Very cool. But who is next? It's Edith Wharton. She was a fascinating person. Edith Wharton was a passionate dog lover and prolific writer of design books and a humanitarian who dedicated her wealth to aiding refugees during World War I. Edith Wharton had a deep love for dogs, owning them throughout her life, and even having a pet cemetery at her home called The Mount. She was also an animal activist, founding the New York Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals with her husband, and they campaigned for dog drinking bowls in New York City. Did you know that before she became a celebrated novelist, Wharton was a keen observer of architecture and design? She co-authored The Decoration of Houses in 1897, and she wrote Italian Villas and Their Gardens in 1904. Now, did you know that when World War I began, Wharton was actually in Europe and dedicated herself to helping refugees? She did things like establishing hostels in Paris for Belgian and French refugees, and helping found the Children of Flanders Rescue Committee. That's incredible, incredible. Now, did you know that in 1921, she became the first woman to win the Pulitzer Prize in fiction for her novel, The Age of Innocence? Edith Wharton began writing as a vocation later in life at the age of 35 and went on to publish nearly a book a year until her death. That's incredible. Did you know that her home, The Mount, has gained a reputation as being a haunted house? In addition to novels, Wharton wrote at least 85 short stories, poetry, plays, and non-fiction books. Oh my God! Now, have you ever read any of her books? The Age of Innocence is one of my favorites. So what is it about? Well, this is Newland Archer's world as he prepares to marry the beautiful but conventional May Welland. But when the mysterious Countess Ellen Olenska returns to New York after a disastrous marriage, Archer falls deeply in love with her. Now he's torn between duty and passion. Archer struggles to make a decision that will either courageously define his life or mercilessly destroy it. It's well worth the read, okay? Well worth it. And last, but by no means least, Isabella Allende. I first heard her name through a TV show, Jane the Virgin. I know, but I had to grab her books after seeing, like, hearing her name and seeing Jane read her books. And honestly, I wished I'd found her sooner. Like, I loved her book, City of the Beasts. So it's about 15-year-old Alexander Cold and about to join his fearless grandmother on a trip of a lifetime. An international geographical expedition is headed to the dangerous remote wilds of South America on a mission to document the legendary Yeti of the Amazon known as the Beast. But there are many secrets hidden in the unexplored wilderness, as Alex and his new friend Nadia soon discover. Drawing on the strength of their spirit guides, both young people are led on a thrilling and unforgettable journey to the ultimate discovery. Now, I highly recommend this series. I really do. I know it's young adult, but trust me, you will not be sorry. Now, what did I find out about Isabel? She is a noted author and journalist. She is considered the first internationally successful female Latin American author. Her books have been translated into 30 languages and sold more than 51 million copies, extending her influence around the world. Now that is by no more small feat. Did you know she affectionately calls her place of writing her casita, which roughly translates to little house? While she writes on an Apple desktop computer, she keeps her first typewriter, which was used to write the letter to her grandfather that started the whole thing, on a shelf. On her bookshelves, she keeps a first edition of every one of her books in every language it's ever been printed in. Now that is so cool. Did you know that she was hit with terrible writer's block following the death of her daughter? So what she decided to do was she took a trip to India. There was a life-changing moment when her guide's car broke down on the side of the road and something there caught her attention. She noticed half a dozen women with children. Not knowing the language, she and her friend approached the women, communicating by touching jewelry and tourist-dyed hair. She ended up giving the women the silver bracelets that she had on her wrist. Now, after the exchange, she and her friend returned to the car. One of the women followed her with a parcel. She first thought that it was a gift in return for the bracelet, but she soon discovered that inside was a newborn baby. It still had the umbilical cord attached. Now, their guide soon intervened, giving the baby back to the reluctant mother. Now, she was so shocked by this interaction, like any normal person would be, and she asked the guide why the woman had done that. Now, the guide said that it was because the baby was a girl and no one wants a girl. So since that moment, she has founded her own charity, which is called the Isabel Allende Foundation. Funded by the profits from her books, the foundation aims to empower women worldwide by protecting them from poverty, disease, and violence. Like, props, man, props. I really loved researching for this. I found so many amazing things out about some incredible women. Have I inspired you to read any of these books by any of these amazing women? Now, which book will you try first? I will list all the books I've recommended by these authors in the caption. Now, I do hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed researching for it. And if you did, please give me a hit on that subscribe button on youtube.com/@therightkindofbooktalk. Now, if you found me on one of my podcasts, maybe give me a follow there. Follow me on TikTok @right.kind.book.talk, Instagram @therightkindofbooktalk, Facebook page @rightkindbooktalk. Don't forget, I also have a book merch store on Etsy, bookaloriandesigns.etsy.com, and my website is bookaloriandesigns.com. You can always email me @therightkindofbooktalk@gmail.com and give me feedback or topics you might like to see. I'm still trying to get some independent authors on to have a little chit chat with me. You can also find The Right Kind of Book Talk on Spotify, Apple Music, RSS, Apple Podcasts, Player FM, Amazon, pretty much anywhere that has podcasts. So give me a follow. Like some of my videos. If you do any of these things, you could be in with a chance to win bookish prizes. Send a friend to my YouTube and they subscribe, you can double your chance of winning. Now, if you go to my Etsy right now, I have a bunch of bookmarks on there for 45% off, but that deal will be ending very soon. Have the reading day you deserve, and I will see you next week. This is Stacey Wright signing off from The Right Kind of Book Talk. Have a great week, readers.